looking for January. And as Mrs. Ferratella did, I just got one housekeeping. I welcome Hilda as vice chair of the committee for starting for 2021.
Thank you.
I ask for approval of the minutes from December 2nd, please.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. So, Planning Director Matt Sosa, you're up.
All right. So, this is just a resolution to modify, adopt, and consolidate Ag District 1. So District 1, the only thing that's new and exciting about this is District 1 is the one that's up for review and recertification, but based on the 2012 review of that district, it was recommended that it be consolidated with District 10. So that's what we're proposing with this resolution as well. Just in general, the two districts combined is 98,000, just over 98,000 acres. After the review, it will be... We were proposing to add 293 acres or parcels, sorry, about 17,700 acres. So 15% of the new proposed district is in production ag land. The other is either vacant land or land that could be used for agricultural purposes in the future.
So will it be assigned a new number?
So it District 10 will be consolidated into District 1, into just a larger district that will be known as District 1. District 10 will go away, and the review date for the parcels in District 10 will just become part of the eight-year cycle of District 1. So in 8 years from now, 2029, believe it or not, is when those parcels will be up for their review and recertification.
So I'll move it to discuss.
Second.
So why are we doing this? I read it and I'm like, what does this mean? Ooh, there's an echo.
Oh, this is just, what does it mean to do the review and recertification?
To combine the two, what is the benefit?
The benefit is time spent in our department reviewing. It takes less time to review less districts. Money associated with the review. I mean, there's a large amount of mailings that go out. And simplicity, it's just easy. I think the end goal really is to go to four districts. If you look at our county and it's essentially a square, and to just divide it into four quadrants and have four districts in each quadrant. This is just the first, well, actually, I mean, we've been consolidating districts. I think Amy had 11 plus districts when she took over as director and consolidated down to seven. And now we're going from seven to four over the next several years. But you can only consolidate districts when it's up for its review and recertification on its eight-year cycle. So we have to wait until that triggers, and then we can begin the consolidation. It'd be great if we could just do it now,
yeah, that's
all at once.
Another reason I was going to ask
you can only do it during its review and recertification.
So Matt, isn't the consolidation also a product of decreased acreage in agricultural production?
Partially. We always try to... add acreage, although I mean you're correct in that a lot of our districts are at this point built out, so to speak. There's not too much ag land to capture and add, so it's just a matter of maintaining them, and it would be much easier and simpler to just do it with four districts. It's also an eight-year rolling cycle, so you just do one review every other year.
More managed.
It's much more manageable, much more streamlined. I mean, at this point, the way our eight-year reviews fall, they're about five of them that are clustered within a three-year period. And then actually, this is the last one of those. And then we don't have another review for another 3 years, none of them, which seems kind of silly. And then all of a sudden, you're scrambling and doing about five in 3 years.
So if there's no further questions or comments, we got a motion and a second. All those in favor of the proposal?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Chris, are you presenting for Jack? Jack, you're up with the contract renewals?
Sure, I can do that. So we have two contracts that are renewed. These have been in place. The Empire Zone has been in place for well over a decade. Hornell Humane Society, if you recall, has been in place for probably about 4 years now. And so same amount, no change from 2020, and they are budgeted.
I'll move that.
A second.
Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Okay. Move on. Jamie Johnson, Steuben County Industrial Development Agency. Yes, Jamie, we all, as legislators, received your annual report, and I understand that's what you're going to review today, but go into a little more detail, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say Happy New Year to everybody. And I appreciate the continued support of the county. Wanted to go into a little bit more depth and detail on the annual report and talk about what 2021 looks like. So Amanda and I are going to try to go through this without too many hiccups. If you could move to the next page, that would be great. So as I stated in my letter in the annual report, 2020, really started out looking like it was going to be a great year. You know, we'd just come off receiving the highest allocation we'd ever received from the CFA process. And we're looking at several projects as we moved into 2020 that were going to be significant projects. And then, of course, as everyone knows, the pandemic hit. And we quickly went from showing up at the office every day, moving projects forward, to working from home, as everybody else did, and serving as a resource to businesses. That was for the first quarter, March, April, May. So end of first quarter, beginning of second quarter, we went from working on projects to really servicing businesses and keeping them abreast of policy changes through communications. That did a couple of things for us. I mean, one, it really demonstrated how quickly we needed to pivot and could pivot, but it also expanded our reach in the county, which I've always been very proud to say that we, had very good relationships with the business community. But I think that has broadened through one of the positive things that has come out of this is that, our reach and our involvement with the business community has broadened, because as we worked with businesses, that expanded the list of contacts that we had and even working with the county. Jack shared all of the information on all of the businesses that had to be certified to get reopened. And that really did broaden our reach. It also demonstrated to me personally, and I just wanted to give a shout out to my staff. They were just critical through all of this because, they were on call 24/7. It seemed like, as policies changed throughout the year. So, 2020, as it started out a good year, really turned into a year of reaction and a response, at least for the first half. Next page, please. So even as the pandemic raged on, we did stay busy with projects. We moved forward with projects such as Finger Lakes Community Health and selling land in the industrial park for a new facility that they're going to be building in 2021. Upstate Niagara continued to operate very successfully and moved forward with some major investments in the facility, even added jobs throughout the year. And we were very helpful and worked closely with them as they worked through that. We also worked on the redevelopment of former Tony R's and the expansion and opening of the Butcher's Son on Market Street in Corning. These were all projects that the IDA assisted with during the year. In addition, as you can see on the left-hand side of your screen, this was done through board changes, staffing changes, and also changes within businesses as businesses pivoted to respond, and we're very proud to say that many of our businesses, took this as an opportunity to really respond and react to the pandemic. And we were very close to a lot of that as it moved on. Page 4 and 5, please. So when we think about the time spent on projects, we can't ignore renewable energy. Renewable energy really was, I hate to say it, but our bread and butter for 2020. We closed on a significant amount of solar projects. We saw our wind projects receive their final approvals from the state to move forward. And just, you know, during the year, four solar projects, you know, were approved by the IDA and either have been built or are under construction. These projects are going to produce over 211 megawatts of power. In addition, in 2021, we expect two of the three wind projects that we were working on to begin construction. Those got delayed. The construction got delayed. Some of that was because of just delays related to legal challenges, but quite honestly, a lot of it was also related to issues getting individuals into New York State because of the travel restrictions. I know as we talked to both Canisteo Wind and you know, other wind projects that we're working on, you know, starting construction in 2020, they just literally could not get people to New York State because of the travel restrictions that were in place, you know, towards the end of the year. So, you know, those projects do expect to move forward in 2021 with construction as things, you know, ease up and change related to travel restrictions. In addition, we've got at least six other solar projects that we are in some level of discussion with. Between the two wind projects and six solar projects, we expect an additional 677 megawatts of power to start construction in 2021, generating millions of dollars in new revenue for taxing entities throughout the county, including the county itself. Page six and seven, please. We also, you know, we're pleased to celebrate the final redevelopment of the former Corning Hospital site. I jokingly said, and many of you have heard me say this, one of my first meetings that I went to when I started 10 years ago was the announcement that Corning Hospital was going to be moving to their current location. So, you know, this redevelopment effort really dates back to 2011. And in 2020, we did see the construction and opening of the First Heritage Federal Credit Union corporate headquarters, which is on the right-hand side at the top of the page. And we also saw the final construction of the final residential units that Reedman Development have under construction. Those will be open this spring. They did get shut down just because of weather, but construction will continue and will be finalized in 2021. But this total project, you know, generated over $42 million in private investment, and I think really has set the stage for future redevelopment on that portion of the community. It's a wonderful project, and you know, demonstrates how a community can come together to focus on a specific area of redevelopment and the impacts that it can create when you look at it from a community development and economic development angle. Page eight and nine, please. We're also active in the final negotiations in the sale of Dana Lyons School in Bath to Providence Housing. This was a project that we are very proud to be part of. As all of you know, that facility has sat there vacant for many years and has becoming an eyesore. And quite honestly, if it continues to sit there without some sort of investment into it, will likely be condemned and have to be torn down. The roof is leaking, floors are buckling. It is in you know, almost a state of disrepair. And we were able to work together with Providence and the Save the Lions group to negotiate a sale, which will result in a $17.7 million reinvestment into that facility, converting the former school into 49 units of what we're classifying as workforce housing. Income is a requirement and will be a requirement in order to lease an apartment in this facility. So there is an income requirement that goes along with it. And when you look at the income levels that are being targeted, well over 60% of the village of Bath qualifies to live in these. So, you know, people say these are low income Section 8 units. They are not. They are targeted for the, you know, the majority of the population in the village of Bath. In addition, we were able to work with Save the Lions include in this development an 8,600 square foot community art center, which is going to be leased to the Waterman Arts Center folks. They are in the process of doing a business plan and financial plan to be presented to the IDA. Because we are investing into that by serving as a lease guarantor for the group in order to allow them to get on their feet for the first couple of years in this new facility. Providence is in the process of finalizing financing. They did get denied in the first round of their applications back in October. That was not unexpected. They said that is typically the way the financing works through the state, is that in the first attempt, you do get denied. You get feedback and prioritization for the second attempt, which is due mid-January. So they are working feverishly to update their application and get it back in. And we're working very closely with them on that. In addition, another thing that came out of 2020 that we are very proud of is the close working relationships that we forged with many of our economic development partners on both ends of the county. Specifically Three Rivers and their new president, Susan Payne. Most of you or many of you know Susan and her unique ability as a consultant to be a to do market analysis and strategic planning. We were able to work with Susan to harness those skills, and we've re-energized what we're classifying as our business expansion, retention, and reinvestment or repurposing initiative, where we're meeting with businesses in targeted sectors. In 2020, it was primarily manufacturing. And we're sitting down with them, and Susan is performing an initial market analysis based on what their business is and what information they share. We've already met with half a dozen businesses and been able to provide this market analysis. And we're very pleased to say that it has been well received, and many of the businesses are actually utilizing this information to go out and explore new market opportunities and be able to grow their business through this. So we're looking forward to expanding that initiative in 2021. And I actually was on the phone with Susan yesterday talking about what our next targets are going to be and how we're going to be able to move that forward. Looking not only at manufacturing, but expanding that and broadening our industry focus. Primarily in 2021, it will remain manufacturing and healthcare. And then in 2022, assuming that the success is what we've seen, we'll look at broadening those markets. Next page, please. So infrastructure investments, as all of you know, a few years ago, we were able to negotiate a contract with the county to help support infrastructure development operations. And we brought on J.C. Smith on a part-time basis to work with local communities on infrastructure needs. We have a meeting coming up in a couple of weeks to finalize a timeline for engineering and construction on the Hammondsport Sewer Project. JC has done a great job of managing that, and we have all of the funds in place to support that initiative. And we're hoping that we can go out to bid in 2020 and start construction. A lot of that will depend on the engineering timeline, but it is moving forward, and JC has been a great addition to do that. In addition, in 2020, we've secured a significant amount of funding for Prattsburg, a similar project in Prattsburg, and JC has been working with them and that community on finalizing the financing. We do have some gaps. We've been talking with our federal partners at EDA and at ARC and our elected officials on how we can close that gap. And we're confident that during 2021, we will find the remaining resources necessary to do a very similar project to what is occurring in Hammondsport, where it's an enhanced septic system, if you will, but it will support the downtown needs. That's become a critical issue for the businesses in Prattsburg to be able to expand. In addition, JC's been working with the town of Bath and has helped secure funding for them to do a water quality analysis around Lake Salubra. He's been working with the consulting team with Bath, with Beguis and the village on how to expand infrastructure to improve water quality and ultimately improve access to economic development as we move forward with those infrastructure needs. So in total, in 2020, IDA projects have generated over $10 million in revenue to local taxing entities through our pilots. This includes just about $2 million in revenue to the county. We are in the process of gathering investment and job impact numbers for 2020. As you can see, we did report our 2019 numbers, and our numbers are always delayed a year because we gather last year's numbers during this time frame, and we will be happy to report the numbers from 2020 when we get them compiled in March. We had a great year in 2019 from an investment and job impact standpoint. I would not suspect that 2020 will look as positive because of the impacts of the pandemic, but we are in the process and just sent our intake form out to those companies yesterday, and we will be gathering that information over the next several months to compile and report to the state and to the county. So, you know, in the rest of the report is basically mission statement and staff and board. So I won't go into too many details, but I did want to, you know, leave everybody with, you know, with a quote from Henry Ford: coming together is the beginning, keeping together is progress, and working together is success. 2020 was really a year where we had to come together with our partners. We had to keep together with them, and we had to work together to achieve the success we did see. You know, our relationships that we had, I think, were critical in moving these projects forward. They were critical in keeping businesses open and operating. You know, I know Jack's on this call. I can't tell you how many times Jack and I communicated after hours, on weekends, during the day, to really make sure that, you know, we kept businesses operating while we kept the public healthy. So I want to thank Jack for his continued support and the county for their continued support as we've done this. I think 2021, you know, once we get through the pandemic, is going to be a critical, a good year, I should say. We're already seeing renewed interest from brokers. You know, we've been working with several of them on, you know, potential project expansions in Steuben County and in new investment. We've also been working with closely with several key supply chain businesses that expect to grow their presence in our market in 2021. So, you know, I do think there is a pent-up demand. We do expect that there's going to be increased opportunities for investment in 2021 as we work through the health crisis. And we look forward to having a very successful year. So I'm just going to close by thanking all of you for all of your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody may have.
So first, I wanted to just congratulate Jamie and his staff. They've done a great job of communicating. Every time I look at some of the reports that they send out to businesses, you've done a great job. And I dare say there's probably not an IDA in this state that does what you guys do. And the question I have, you were saying for Dana Lyons, Providence. Is Providence the same company that was talking about redoing the whole St. Vincent's property in Corning?
Yes.
Is that the same company?
Same group, same company. They have developments all over upstate New York. And there are different types of developments. They do have in their portfolio what would be considered low-income Section 8 voucher housing, but then they also do, you know, what we're looking at here in Bath, which is, you know, much more of a middle-income, you know, level type of housing. And it, you know, it really depends on the community as to what they're looking at. These are tax credit projects, so, you know, I'll be the first to say that, you know, there are income requirements to being in this, but they also, for this project in Bath, are going to require that the individuals leasing can demonstrate that they have income coming in. So this isn't a voucher program where people are going to be, you know, getting a voucher from the government and just handing it to Providence. This is actually going to be a little a little bit different than what was being proposed at St. Vincent's.
Let's see, the other was, The lots that are, the empty lot now that borders Corning Riverside, is there any action on that, or do you think that might happen in 2021 now that it's cleared?
I know Fred R. Curie has been working on that through Corning Enterprises, and Fred and I have had conversations about different financing options. I can't tell you whether there's any active discussions because Corning Enterprises and Fred have taken the lead on developing that parcel. But I think it's a good parcel. I think it's, you know, got a lot of potential, and I know Fred is working hard on identifying prospects. So at this point, Hilda, I can't say whether or not there's any, you know, sort of hot leads on it, but I do know that there's a lot of focus being put on it.
Thank you.
Jamie, this is Carol Ferratella. Any update on the foundry site in the village of Painted Post?
Yes, actually. So tonight, the Village of Painted Post has a planning board meeting where Tioga Container will be presenting the final noise and vibration studies that they had to complete. I think the last time they were in front of the village was in October, and those were two pieces that needed to be completed. So with holidays and everything that were in place, those just got completed. I think it was before the new year, they got the final vibration study back in, which is a phase two vibration study. Those are going to be presented to the planning board tonight. And the expectation is that they will receive final site plan approval at the February meeting, with the hopes that construction can start on the project as soon as the weather breaks in the spring.
Thank you.
Jamie, this is Scott. Can you give us an update on the loan program that we took part in last year along with Corning Enterprises and the IDA?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have specific numbers, but I can get them to you. I know Chris Brewer is on the committee with me, and we can distribute those numbers, through Chris once I get them. I'll say that wasn't as utilized as I thought it was going to be. We lent out roughly half the money that was included in the program and in the portfolio. I do know there seems to be a little bit of renewed interest in that as we now enter into the winter months. And I think, you know, we will see some renewed activity in that program as your Main Street businesses, you know, really look to struggle through the next several months of winter. One of the things that we'll need to do in 2021, Scott, is reassess that and look at how we can adapt that to meet the needs of 2021 for Steuben County businesses going forward. I don't want to speak for Corning Enterprises or the county, but I can speak for the IDA, you know, that our intention, you know, was to make sure that money supported Steuben County businesses in whatever form that looked like. And, we didn't intend to get a return on that. So I want to work with REDEC and the committee to look at ways where we can get that money back out on the street in a manner that will support our businesses. So we've got about half the money left over, I think just a little over half the money. I think the next couple of months we'll see some additional activity. I know Kelly Fitzpatrick sent us a lead and had a lead for George, and there have been a couple of others. And then I think, you know, we get into February, I think it'll be time to really start talking about, okay, what do we do with that money and that investment now to I don't want to say redirect it or repurpose it, but to possibly look at changing the focus of the program to support businesses.
Okay, thank you.
Jamie, this is Gary Swag. Going back on your solar companies.
Yep.
I was talking to an engineer a couple of months ago. At this point, there's not even a way to get rid of the old solar panels and so on. Are we protecting ourselves from cleanup, disposal, and maintenance?
The IDA board, I don't know, Jill Stats is on the line here from our office. I would say late summer, we were having a discussion, and our board determined and decided that part of our requirement through the IDA to provide assistance was there had to be a decommissioning plan in place and approved with bonding in place to handle any decommissioning that would be required to get rid of the projects if they were non-operational. Most of those decommissioning plans that we are seeing are part of the local municipality's site plan review approvals. And we need to see that in place before we will approve it. If it's not in place, then the IDA will require it be an action of our approval. So we definitely, you know, have the same feeling, you know, that we want to make sure that there are protections in place to protect these communities, and our board has taken action to require that.
How many acres do we have under SORO, did you say?
Jill, do you have, I mean, most of these are four, they're smaller ones, you know, so I'd say 20 to 30 acres right now, because they are small community solar projects. They're not the larger commercial projects. So most of them are, you know, the neighborhood of 5 to 10 megawatts, and, you know, probably, I'd probably say 100 acres, because what are they, Jill, about 20 acres a piece?
Yeah, 20 to 30, depending on the
layout. So 20 to 30, and I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 40 megawatts total between all four of the projects we've approved.
Yeah, we just don't want to get into the same thing we did with the old landfills and so on, where we have to upkeep them, and it's a county cost.
No, most of the communities have become very adept at their community solar laws and require decommissioning bonding be in place. And we're almost acting as a second protection of that in the event that there is not that requirement by the community.
Thank you.
Jamie, this is Paul. Okay, go ahead.
on the solar projects, I know there's been some concerns about the closeness to property, other neighboring properties of the location of these panels. Are there any setback requirements from property lines or from residences for these projects?
We do not have any of that, but I do know that the individual municipalities, they're talking to each other about this, and you're seeing that they're getting more adept in their planning process, and they are, you know, looking at other communities' solar laws, and many of the new solar laws do have setback requirements. I can't tell you what they are, Fred. And again, that's not something that we have required. We've left it up to the individual municipalities to determine what the appropriate setback requirements would be. But before they get any benefits from us, they have to go through that site plan requirement. And we're also encouraging the municipalities to all take a look at their renewable energy laws to make sure that they include something in their laws for battery storage, because I do see that as the next phase of development for renewable energy in the county, is to include battery storage in some of these projects, which would basically mean large scale batteries, you know, tractor trailer size lithium ion batteries in series, you know, parked together to store those. So we are encouraging, you know, all of the municipalities to make sure that their renewable energy laws consider that type of development as well.
Thank you.
Paul. Hey, Jamie, this is Paul Van Castle. Low to middle income individuals in Hornell I've been talking to are struggling to find housing. Currently, it's been a little bit difficult. And I just wondered if there was any future plans in the works to provide housing, or to help provide housing and build new projects or anything like that in Hornell. We've got the newer ones they put up on Fairlawn and the ones down by the airport, but those are kind of pricey, and it's really a struggle to find income or housing and apartments for lower to middle income individuals.
Yeah, and I know the county just commissioned a housing study that confirmed a lot of that. I'm not aware at the moment of any types of projects that are under development, but I'd be more than happy to reach out to the mayor and the Hornell IDA and see what, you know, what is on the docket or if anything is being planned over there.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll talk to the mayor too. Thanks.
Yeah. And we'd be more than happy, you know, to introduce them if need be to some of the developers that we've worked with, like Providence, who really specialize in, you know, in that middle, low to middle income type of housing. You know, so I'm happy to make an introduction if necessary.
Hey, thank you. What's that?
Cornell IDA.
I know. Well,
I have one.
I tell you, given the current state of our state and the restrictions the governor has put on landlords and tenants' rights, I don't know anybody that would want to invest in public housing right now.
Kelly, you have a comment?
I'm just curious, any updates on or bites on Phillips?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Kelly.
I have a microphone, Jamie. I'll repeat it. She wondered if there was any updates or information on the Phillips plant development.
I have been sworn to secrecy. I wish I could tell you, but I can say that there are active discussions within Phillips on the future of that facility. How's that for a politically correct answer that really didn't tell you anything?
But that's a good sign.
I will say that the discussions that are ongoing, I think may surprise many of you, but I'm very pleased with the direction that they're going.
Yay.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, this is Robin. I just want to point out that I, as a legislator, and I know my colleagues in the room, we value the working relationship we have with you and Jill and JC and the rest of your IDA associates. And your forthcoming information is always appreciated. And I hope that you are, well, I'm along with you. I think there is pent-up demand out there. We're so hoping for some business and job development to be a result of that. And all I can say is release the Kraken.
Well, and again, I do. Come from the, you know, where I came from, the relationship here is with the legislature is much different. And I so value that. And I appreciate that. I encourage, and I've always done so, you know, so any legislator that has, you know, questions, please feel free to give us a call, reach out. You know, sometimes I'll be the first to admit, you know, I can't say. I mean, we've got NDA agreements, and, you know, in place, and there are things that I wish I could tell this body, but, you know, we just can't. And at this point in time, you know, with some of these projects that we're working on, it's premature. So I can tell you that 2021 has, you know, started out on a very, very positive note with the interest that we're seeing. Now, at this point, yes, much of it is only interest. We do have some things that are in final stages of development, which I think we'll be very happy. You'll be very happy to hear about, you know, once they come to a, you know, final resolution. But I do think 2021, you know, barring no surprises with the pandemic, I think is going to be a very positive year for development here in Steuben County. So, you know, if any of the legislators hear anything, have any questions, you know, feel free to give us a call, and, you know, I'll be the first to say whether I can talk about it or not, or I can confirm or deny or give you any details. But we have an open, you know, open door here. You know, please feel free. We are an agent of the county, and, you know, we want to make sure that relationship continues to be strong.
Thank you, Jamie. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to all of you as well.
Okay, with that note, we'll move on. In other business, I want to call attention to County Manager Jack Wheeler. At our December meeting, Aaron Mullen had suggested that we contact NYSAC to try to initiate a gathering of information and data on COVID to try to get all the counties into real data time. Is that something that was requested? Was there a response? Can you give us a status?
Sure. Yeah. So I did right after the meeting reach out to Steve Aquario and to Mark Levine and Dave Lucas. And Darlene also reached out to NYSACHO, which is the public health directors. And unfortunately, what we are seeing is New York State Department of Health holding data very, very closely. So those requests had already been made for those demographics. They do have demographics for deaths. So I will send those around, or I'll send that link around. But the request had previously been made before we made it. And Darlene and NYSAC escalated that request again, and it's been radio silence. So that's a very frustrating part, because you know, to everyone's point, the openness and transparency of data, especially in a pandemic, is very, very important.
So I guess my next question is, if the Department of Health or the state bureaucracy is impeding the release of that information, why cannot the counties voluntarily give it to NYSAC?
I would say that not every county tracks exactly like we do. I would hope that many of them have the same data that NYSAC could collect, and I did talk to Steve about that as well, but I don't think that we would get a full snapshot like we would for what we would get from New York State Department of Health. I can continue to follow up on that side to try to get the counties to report that, but you know, it's just a matter of, you know, will they? Would they participate with that?
It's so hard for me to understand when there's one system, ECLAIR or whatever it's called, that we have to provide, everybody in the state has to provide that data into one system, that it should be fairly easy to be able to get that information out.
I don't think ease is the problem here.
But even entering that data, all the counties have to enter the data.
The state does not want to release this information.
No, I understand, but if the counties have to enter the data, they could possibly give it to NYSAC or whatever, share it with everybody, because they're it's the same data.
Well, the counties aren't the only ones entering that data. Actually, primarily it's whoever does the testing and the resulting. So it's primarily hospital systems that enter the data, and we can only view data for our county. So that's why we can track, you know, who was tested, who's positive, who's negative. You know, we can track everything pretty thoroughly for our county, but we do not have the ability to look at others. And I agree, it's not an ease. It's just a willingness to provide that data. We're seeing the same thing, you know, to Darlene's earlier point with vaccine rollout. It's just, they'll share information when they choose to, no matter how many times we ask. And it's highly, highly, highly frustrating.
And it's not an off-base comment that the states control the funding to the hospitals, so they hold the purse strings. Just my thoughts.
Yep. All politics and messaging. That's why they don't want to release it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've probably all seen, there have been numerous groups. You know, I've seen FOIL requests from every major news outlet. I've seen Commissioner Zucker testify about when the full scope of nursing home cases and deaths would be released to the public. And we're talking, you know, going on 5 months that they've said they will provide that information, and still nothing. So it's just very, very frustrating. I'll talk to NYSAC again and try to see if there's another way to slice it. But you know, going county by county, that's going to put some in a, you know, I'm not sure exactly where NYSAC will fall on that, because, you know, if the counties aren't tracking it exactly like we are, or as actively involved, which frankly, there are some that, you know, are not as kind of diligent as we are, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but you know, it would potentially create additional work for them, and I don't know what NYSAC's view on that would be. To the earlier point, you know, the state has all those spreadsheets, those databases. They would just have to, I mean, you could run those graphs and those demographics within a matter of hours at most.
And suffice it to say too, if there's counties where the folks that are doing the testing and the hospitals are only reporting to the state, so anything you get back from those counties, even if they comply with our request, is still going to be missing data.
Correct. Yeah, we're very fortunate because we have great hospital systems and hospital administrators and partners that, including the nursing homes, they are under no legal requirement to comply with any of our requests, except for, you know, in some cases, testing. You know, Darlene does have the ability to compel them to do some things, but they're voluntarily providing us with all of the operational and situational data that we have, you know, because they know how important it is to keep track of things at a local level to find out exactly what's happening on a day-to-day basis. That's why we can track the trends, but I can tell you, you know, especially some of the smaller counties, they're probably not doing that.
Okay. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
I don't know that we're ever going to get this data. And after everyone's immunized, 5-6 months later, the state's just going to hope that we forget about everything, I guess.
Maybe the governor will write another book about it.
Yeah, we can read about it.
And that's what it is, exactly what it is.
Okay, any other business to come before the committee? I would just remind everyone, the Chairman Van Etten has asked all the committee chairs for 2021 goals. Doesn't need to be a long laundry list, but if any of you have any suggestions, email me or give me a call. And so I can have those ready and include your comments or your thoughts.
So I'd like to comment about that. It's a real pain in the you know what for me. I think we talk about these goals and we put them on paper. Well, not everybody, I have to tell you. Not all the committees have goals or have had in the past, have written up their goals. And either we all do it or we don't do it. And I think that's my big problem. And I know Carol knows because in her committee, we did it. And I don't know where it went. And the other committees didn't do it. So either we all do it or we don't do it. That's my comment, Chairman.
That's fine. Point of, we did this all through Joe's tenure. And it was kind of difficult to see that we actually achieved more than 50% of the goals that were set out by committees that did set them out. I think the point is, unless you set goals and actually try to work towards something, that, and you know, Hilda, being a Corning, goals have to be measurable, achievable, you know, but then all we are is a reactionary body to whatever is brought in front of us each month. So if it's good if we could at least say, this is what we'd like to do in the next year.
Oh, I'm in favor of it. I think we should, but I think we all should do it. That's my point.
Yeah, I would agree with Hilda. I mean, I thought the 2019 goals we had were excellent because it was a survey of all the departments, and we got some good information back. And I thought that should have been expanded to all committees because they were good questions and gave us a lot of good answers.
I just sent it out this morning when I was sitting here early.
I haven't seen it. I agree. I think we should. I mean, I agree completely with that.
Yeah, we didn't even do them last year. We'd sent out an email to start and then the world stopped spinning. Yeah. So.
And done. Okay. So no other business. ask for a motion to adjourn.
Move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Adjourn.